Welcome to Life Quest Liberty, live in-depth conversations with today's top writers, editors, and spiritual leaders concerning religious freedom around the world. On today's broadcast, we'll examine local and international factors that may be impacting your right to worship and obey God as your conscience dictates. I'm your Life Quest Liberty host, Charles Mills. John Bunyan. We've talked about this man before on this show, but Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine, says he still has much to teach us. Lincoln, what do we need to know about this 300-plus-year-old English writer and Puritan preacher?
Well, you know, even as you say the name, I'm thinking that today the world is probably divided between those few people that remember John Bunyan and those who think he's a podiatrist.
That's true.
But, you know, not too many generations ago, going all the way back to his time in the mid-1600s, John Bunyan was a towering figure in the religious world because of his writings, in particular, Pilgrim's Progress, but not just that. He wrote a number of works, his autobiography, Grace Abounding, To the Chief of Sinners, The Holy War was another well-received book, and one that I've just recently read, The Life and Death of Mr. Badman, another allegory. And John Bunyan was active in the 1600s. He was central to the religious conflict that was raging in England that resulted in a civil war. John Bunyan was a soldier in that civil war, but it was actually after he was mustered out that he discovered Christianity in the truest sense, because he was a reprobate, as he said, a soldier, which is typical. A lot of soldiers are hard-bitten activists, but not religionists. And after he got religion, he spent a few years in jail for his nonconformist views. And after he got out of jail, he published Pilgrim's Progress, which, as I've often said when I talk publicly, was one of four books that pretty much every Christian in early America would have.
Yes.
There would be the Bible, King James Version, what else? There would have been Fox's Book of Martyrs, which was a collection of persecution stories from the early Christian church right through to the English Civil War.
That's not a book for the squeamish, I can tell you that right now.
No, and even allowing for a little purple prose and that, it's a good compendium of the different conflicts of conscience that Christians had had through the years, and allow for a little bit of cynicism about the Roman Catholic Church, which is the mainline church for most of that time, was the persecuting power.
Yes, right.
Then the other book that they would always have would be John Milton's Paradise Lost, and then John Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress. Pretty good collection of books when books were not easily gotten by the common person, and a lot of people had trouble reading, but they usually struggled through John Bunyan, and I think Paradise Lost they might have chopped here and there, because it's a long poem,
yes,
but a fabulous, maybe another time we'll talk about it, fabulous outline of the great controversy between God and Satan and the creation, fall, and redemption of man. So John Bunyan's not to be dismissed, and his book is one of the most printed in the English language, his book Pilgrim's Progress. And for me, I don't know if I've told this group of listeners on this radio program, but for me, it was pivotal to my life. As a young kid growing up in Australia, in my first couple of years in public school before my family moved closer to our church headquarters in Australia and I attended a church school, I went to this public school, and I used to have to walk a couple of miles to school, uphill, down dale, under railway overpasses and through a little town and over the train station and so on. I got up to a lot of tricks that usually involve wading in dirty water or losing my shoes, getting lost, and so on. But I remember one day on an empty plot that we used to play on, coming home and seeing a circus-type tent pitched there, some big paintings out front of 17th-century pilgrim with his load on his back marching somewhere, and then another picture that really inspired me of a fellow in medieval knightly armor battling a dragon. And then a busker was out front saying, kids, come and hear the story. Every day after school, we're going to tell you the story of this man fighting his way through from the city of destruction to the celestial city. And I remember being just transfixed, listening to the story as it was narrated bit by bit of John Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress. as he says, an allegory of the journey from this life to the life to come. I've defended it to some people that don't like allegories, thinking it's fiction. It's not really fictional at all. You only have to read a few paragraphs to know very plainly. He's talking about the Christian experience,
yes, absolutely.
The Christian life, the move from worldliness to holiness to dedication to the Lord and the final reward over the River Jordan, which is the end of this life, but then a life eternal in the celestial city. Powerful stuff, powerful stuff.
I think the reason why it is powerful is because you and I and people who read this, and if they recognize what he is really describing here, is common. We go through what he talks about. We experience what he talks about. That's what makes it powerful, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. Yeah. I don't think I've read this on this program, and if so, I'll just ask forgiveness and do it anyway. The best explanation I can see of John Bunyan is in his book, Grace Abounding. And I'm just going to read a couple of paragraphs, but he tells there what changed him, because he was a pretty foul-mouthed guy by his own testimony.
Sure.
And usually people don't speak the worst about themselves, so others may have thought him worse than he said.
Yes.
But he says this, he says, I fell into company with one poor man that made profession of religion, who, as I then thought, did talk pleasantly of the scriptures and of the matters of religion. Therefore, falling into some love and liking to what he said, I betook me to my Bible and began to take great pleasure in reading, but especially with the historical part thereof. Big mistake. A lot of people like to read the Bible as just literature, but it's right. A bit more than that. And he says, thus I continued about a year, all of which time our neighbors did take me to be a very godly man, a new and religious man, and did marvel much to see such a great and famous alteration in my life and manners. And indeed so it was, though yet I knew not Christ, nor grace, nor faith, nor hope. For as I have well seen since, had I then died, my state had been most fearful. That's an interesting self-awareness.
Yes,
and then he continues, he says, yet I loved to be talked of as one that was truly godly. I was proud of my godliness, and indeed I did all I did, either to be seen of or to be well spoken of by men. But upon a day, the good providence of God called me to Bedford to work in my calling, which was tinker, just a handyman. And in one of the streets of that town, I came to where there were three or four poor women sitting at a door in the sun, talking about the things of God. And being now willing to hear them discourse, I drew near to hear what they said, for I was now a brisk talker also myself in the matters of religion. But I may say, I heard but understood not, for they were far above, out of my reach. Their talk was about a new birth, the work of God on their hearts. Also, how they were convinced of their miserable state by nature. They talked how God had visited their souls with his love in the Lord Jesus, and with what words and promises they had been refreshed, comforted, and supported against the temptations of the devil. And methought, says Bunyan, they spake as if joy did make them speak. They spake with such pleasantness of scripture language and with such appearance of grace in all that they said that they were to me as if they had found a new world, as if they were people that dwelt alone and were not to be reckoned among their neighbors. At this, I felt my own heart began to shake and mistrust my condition to be naught, for I saw that in all my thoughts about religion and salvation, the new birth did never enter into my mind. Neither knew I the comfort of the word and promise, nor the deceitfulness and treachery of my own wicked heart. And here's the clincher. He says, by these things, my mind was now so turned that it lay like a horse leech at the vein, still crying out, give, give. Yea, it was so fixed on eternity and on the things about the kingdom of heaven that as far as I knew, though as yet God knows I knew but little, neither pleasures, nor profits, nor persuasions, nor threats could loose it or make it let go its hold.
Wow.
That's a pretty good emotional description of what it means to find God and to find a reason for a change in life.
I like the way he described himself as a horse leech. I mean, that was saying, you know, wretched man that I am, I'm at the vein and I need God to give to me, give to me.
You must have had a leech before.
I've seen them, absolutely.
I've shared that a few times, and I'm not sure everybody in at least in city life, has any idea of what a leech is like. They don't hurt, but they're pretty amazing. And some of the ones in Australia are 3-4 inches long.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
And they won't let go easy. And when you do, there's blood everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
They just suck, and they'll swell up 3 or 4 times their normal size from the blood they suck from you.
So he was basically saying, you know, wretched man that I am, I need this nourishment from this vein.
I'm not going to let go.
I'm not going to let go. Wow, that is amazing.
And I think that's what makes his writing so powerful. Yes. I mean, it's not just an artifact or an artifice. He was writing from experience. He believed this stuff. And John Bunyan has been a powerful force. But it's worth remembering, particularly thinking on religious liberty, that he was imprisoned, deprived of his liberty, because he was speaking about religion. He didn't particularly have a deviant theology. He was just at a time. Actually, he started his preaching as Oliver Cromwell, the religious dictator, strongman of the Puritans, had died, and the king had come back and was persecuting the nonconformists, which John Bunyan clearly was. He's been claimed as a Baptist, but that's really more functional than an identity. Mm-hmm. He was a Puritan, a non-Anglican itinerant preacher who wanted to share the gospel, wanted to share what God had done with him. And he affected people powerfully. But at that time, if you were not licensed, and you could not be licensed as a non-Church of England preacher, so the penalty was fines, and if you persisted, prison. I know I've said it on this program before, but his wife implored the judges many times, let him out, let him out. One of the judges says, madam, all he has to do is stop preaching, we'll let him out. She says, oh, no, he'll never stop.
Yeah, yeah.
I probably made the point before, but it's worth remembering. The Bible, Paul in Hebrews, makes it very plain that the faithful persecuted through the ages, it says, refusing to accept release. You can get yourself out of trouble, Bunyan, by stopping preaching, other people by recanting, as the request was usually made just before they burned or garrotted you. Yes. You can recant and walk away free often, but that's a spiritual compromise. Deny your Lord. It's not something that a truly born-again Christian or a person dedicated to any faith could or should do. You know, Shakespeare said, to thine own self be true. You've got to follow through on your convictions, or else, what are they? They're certainly not convictions by definition.
Well, we have had a wonderful time today talking about John Bunyan. What's the name of that book again you were quoted from?
Grace Abounding.
Grace Abounding.
It's the short version, Chief of Sinners, and it goes a little further.
All right.
But it's his life story. Find it online easily.
Okay. Well, Lincoln, thank you very much for sharing with us today. And this came from your heart, and we know it. Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure.
And listener, until next time, this is Charles Mills, along with Lincoln Steed, inviting you to rest in the freedom of God's love. Goodbye, everyone.
If you'd like more information about LifeQuest Liberty, call 443-391-7258. Or email us through our website at libertymagazine.org. Join us again next week at this same time as we examine more of the threats and challenges facing your religious freedom. May God keep the flames of liberty burning in your heart today.